This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Second hour of Money Moves. I don't want to alarm anybody, but the lights just kind of changed on me. That was kind of weird. But they're back, so that's fine. I don't want to worry our producer. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, by the way, filling in for Stormy Bonantoni. I'm going to live. Everything's okay. Jameson Taillon not doing so well, though. Houston Astros up 1-0 solo shot from Jose Altuve, the 26th home run allowed from Taillon this season. The homer issues continue. We hit on those in the breakdown, and we're banking on those to continue, so we'll see if that's the case. Lead the run in half, then subsequently gave up a double. So 1-0 count right now for Trammell and a guy on second with one out. We'll see if the Astros can continue to do damage, part of three games in Major League Baseball that are currently going on right now. But as we headed out, we called it nut-cutting time at the PGA Tour because this is it. We're going to get this thing whittled down to, I believe, 70. John Haselbauer is with us. Lineups, Preferred Lines podcast at PGA Tout. Nice enough to give us a couple of minutes here today. Is that a fair way to put the Wyndham Championship? It is time to nut up or shut up for some of these guys.
That's exactly it. Yeah, a lot of guys have backed themselves into a corner, not up or shut up. As you said, it's the last week. It's the last chance. It is the last event of the regular season before the playoffs start, and only the top 70 make it this year. In last year, they converted it to top 70. Before that, it was usually 120. So it really is the best of the best who make it to the playoffs, and a lot of guys have a lot to play for.
Yeah, I was actually kind of fascinated because I was reading an article from Golf Week about, I think it was Adam Schreiber, who I guess he was getting like last minute calls from guys to like fix the swing this week because they're just so desperate to kind of get in here. So it gives a sense of what this is looking like. So let me ask you this before we get to the field and some of your plays. So how does this manifest in the sense of, you know, sometimes at the end of seasons when teams need to win, you know, you pull out all the stops, whatever cliche you want to use. Will guys try to like carry a bunker when they usually can't? Will they get more aggressive in how they're trying to play things? If this is now initially, hey man, I've got to do this, finish this certain way so I can move on. How does this now manifest for some of these guys? Will these dudes get more aggressive?
Yeah, it can definitely be a double-edged sword to that point. Like, is there more urgency? Absolutely, but there's also more pressure. So some guys respond differently under pressure. Some guys will overreact. You know, if they get an early bogey, they might play a little bit more aggressively, as you said, because there's zero margin for error for these guys. They know where they have to finish. If you're 80th coming into this week, you probably need a top 20 finish to pass those 10 guys. Otherwise, you need a lot of help. You need a lot of missed cuts from guys who are on that bubble. So I'm sure every player would answer that question by saying they're just going to play their game and do their best this week. But it will expose some guys who are under more pressure. And you'll see that on Sunday for sure when there's guys who are right. They'll have that live graphic of on the good side or on the bad side of the cut. Every birdie will sway that significantly. So it's just a very entertaining like TV viewership tournament for us too.
On the flip side of this, guys that are safely in, will you see them? Like how does that actually look when they're playing out there? Will they push to win this thing? Will they just generally be pretty nonchalant with the way they're playing it and just kind of keep whatever in the bag until this next round? How do dudes that are safely moving on handle those last few rounds?
Yeah, well, you want to get in the playoffs, but ultimately you really want to get to Eastlake. You want to be in the top 30 to play for the tour championship, because that's where you get guaranteed into all of the signature events for the following season. So there are collaterally building benefits to stacking up there. So if you are somebody who's even 30th right now, you want to keep putting your best golf out there so that you're guaranteeing yourself a spot at the end of the day, playing for the tour championship, which by the way, this year, this is the first time they've eliminated the starting strokes. There's a lot of money up for grabs there, and a lot of guys will have a chance, you know, to compete for it.
All right, so let's talk about some of the guys that are on your list. Let's start with Ben Griffin. Misses the cut out at the Rocket Classic, but on your list, what do we like about Ben this week?
Yeah, I love Ben Griffin. He's got excellent course history here. He's a Carolina guy. Grew up in Chapel Hill, went to University of North Carolina right there, which is, you know, less than an hour's drive from Greensboro, where they're playing this year. He's finished top 15 in three of his first four starts here, and this is the type of course that you see a lot of that sticky course history. Guys who play well before tend to be able to repeat that because it's such a specific question being asked on this golf course, which is, can you drive it accurately? Can you stick your wedges close from inside 150? And are you a skilled putter who can manage these very nuanced and challenging to read Donald Ross greens? And it's Bermuda, which we know Ben Griffin is great on. So yes, he's coming off a missed cut. Interesting note, in fact, on that over the years, looking at the trends, a lot of the players who've won this event are actually coming off a bounce back from either a missed cut or worse than 60th finish in their start before. So I'm not too deterred when I look at the board this week from buying back or buying low on somebody coming off of a poor start in their most recent one.
Okay. What about Alex Fitzpatrick? Because I know he's on your list as well. You know, we'll call him relatively short. He's 38-1. We haven't seen him since the Open Championship, though, correct?
Yeah, that's right. You know, some guys, this isn't necessarily the case for Alex, but some guys know if they're in the FedEx playoffs, they've got three consecutive weeks of golf coming up, so they don't want to overload their schedule. So you'll see that with a lot of guys in this field if they have good positioning, that it's not uncommon to see them take 2 weeks off. But with Alex, he's actually a Wake Forest grad, so he knows Winston-Salem right down the road here. Cameron Young last year was a Wake Forest champ. Alumni, Webb Simpson, also a Wake Forest guy. So these Wake Forest guys tend to play well since it's, you know, so familiar in this neck of the woods. He's an accuracy guy, a specialist, doesn't hit the ball very far, but a great iron player, good putter, and accurate driver. That's what you want this week.
So you got a couple of long shot, middle shot, middle of the board plays, we'll call them, in that range of 60-1. By the way, John Hausbauer with us, lineups and preferred lines podcast at PGA Tout. Following him up on X. So from Brian Harman to Ryo Hisatsune, walk us through those two and what we like about them.
Yeah, I think in general, the way that I approach golf betting is I put the same amount of risk in to pay out the same reward out. Some weeks that's going to be betting a single bet on the favorite at, let's say, 8-1. You could do that with Cameron Young in this week if you so choose and just ride with him. But weeks like these, I just see a lot more ways in for the field to compete. And so I've built a little bit of a longer car with more exposure to some of these mid-tier, like 70-1 guys like Brian Harman, like Hisatsune. Really, the through line with all these guys that I'm betting as quote-unquote long shots is their comp course history. How well do they play on other short courses, positional ones that you don't need the distance, but you really need that emphasis on accuracy? Two guys, you know, obviously Brian Harman winning the Open, that was on a shorter venue. He's not a distance guy, but he really makes his hay with his accuracy. And Hisatsune is not too different. An accurate guy, not super long, but striking it really well. Great tee to green play coming into this week.
So I'm curious, and the reason why I kind of wanted to stop there with your outrights is because you do have some crossover with your first round leaders and your outright winners for the tournaments. So how do you decipher guys that you want to use for a first round leader ticket as well as your outrights? Because you do have a couple of guys that you've got both on.
Yeah, when I approach the first round leaderboard, I think there's more volatility there. So I'm never one to bet a top 5 or 10 favorite. I don't think the value is really there. So I tend to spread my exposure to really that like 60 to 100-1 range in most weeks. I'm always going to bet Aaron Rye. That's my guy every week, first round leader. Whenever he's playing, I'm always betting him. He comes out to a hot start. It's just fun to have a consistent guy there. But yeah, you've pulled up my card here. So Michael Kim, Alex Smalley, Griot, and McCarthy, all guys who can get a hot putter. I think that's really what you need for first round leader on a Donald Ross course. Are you a skilled putter? Can you catch fire and string along, you know, 5 or 6 in a row like that? So the through line there is definitely putting skill.
So you got Griot outright, you've got him first round leader, you also have a matchup over Nick Taylor, so I would assume that these are all pretty pro Griot, a pro Griot tournament, not so much anti-Nick Taylor, or maybe there's some of that in that matchup play.
Yeah, a little more pro-Griot. I think we talk about President's Cup. If you don't make the playoffs, which Griot is right now on the wrong side looking in, I believe he's 80th. So he's got a lot to play for just to make the playoffs. He's also got a lot to play for to get a look from the international team captain to get a spot on that President's Cup team. If I were the captain, I would pick him. I think he's playing really well. He's got 5 straight top 30s leading in. He's peaking at the right time, and the putter's turning around for him. But a lot of motivation for him. You hope that that's motivating and not too much pressure for him. On the opposite side, on that matchup with Nick Taylor, it's been all putter for him. The tee to green game has not looked sharp for a while now. He's really the finishes that he's posted are all on the backs of his putter. And you do need to be pretty sharp from tee to green to get those scoring opportunities at Sedgefield, because the rough here in that Bermuda is super penal for the misses.
So for some of these bets, you know, I always like to bet listen to you guys about your process. I'm not a big golf bettor. I'll throw a couple outrights in and that's it. So for somebody like you, kind of similar to what we talked about with the first round leaders, what's the process in differentiating between a guy that you want to play for like a top 20 or a top 30? Is it just based on what your projections are and you see a lot of value in there? Or is there something else you see when you're trying to add as well to guys who are going to be not only first round leaders, but top 20 and top 10 plays?
Yeah, it definitely varies by the player, by the tournament. For this week in particular, I really like Ben Griffin. Didn't like his top 20 odds. They're, you know, close to even money, but I really like him to contend this week. So a top 10 there, I think, makes sense. If this was a limited field, I'd probably bet more top 10s because I see more value there. in a short field, but typically I'm looking for guys in the top 20 market. Ben Coles, as an example here, great player on paper, absolutely perfect fit for this course, accuracy specialist, but he's shown some trouble closing on Sunday. So this acts as a little bit of an insurance on some of the outright bets. If he's not going to close the deal, I still think he's going to play well, even if he can't necessarily handle the pressure on Sunday.
Follow him up on Twitter at PGA Tout. Wyndham Championship coming up this weekend. All the plays up there. You watch up at VSiN.com. We appreciate it, John. Thank you very much. John to John, good luck.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yep, you got it, man. Again, at PGA Tout up on X. You want to give him a follow there. Great work. Has been phenomenal when it comes to some of the golf plays that he's given us here at the network throughout the PGA Tour season. Preseason football, though, does start this week. Time to book your trip to Vegas. Winner Circle Proxy, VSiN's preferred proxy service. After your required in-person registration, they handle your weekly submissions so you can make your picks from anywhere. One trip to Vegas, play all season long. Schedule your appointment now at winnerscircleproxy.com. Blood finally drawn. Here we go. Houston Astros finally getting all over Jameson Taillon. We did get the party started with the Jose Altuve home run, a solo shot earlier, then a couple of knocks driving it in. I believe it was Bregman who helped, or not Bregman, excuse me, who got that party started there for the Houston Astros. It was Walker. Looked like Alex Bregman. He doesn't even play for the team. Top of the fourth inning, Houston Astros 3-0 over the Toronto Blue Jays. Taillon, of course, charged with all of those. He's given up 6 hits so far, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts, and the home run allowed. Other places, Chicago Cubs up 3-1 here in the third over the Los Angeles Dodgers. Remember, Dodgers looking to avoid getting swept in 2 consecutive series and still scoreless between the Rangers and the Giants. We move on. We continue to press on. Coming up next, our training camp tour continues.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are underway between Tampa Bay and Colorado. Big brain fart, by the way. I just saw a white dude, and I was like, Alex Bregman, Astros. Like, he does not play for the Houston Astros. But either way, Stros are up on top, and now Brown working his magic. We'll see if he can continue to get this done. Somewhat efficient so far. Top of the fourth, 51 pitches in, 1-2 count right now. Scoreless. The Blue Jays are scoreless in that one. Astros are up 3-0. Speaking of nothing, that's how many runs the Rockies have. Rays immediately jump out on top here at the top of the first inning. So that's a good sign for Tampa Bay today. We didn't get to the preseason the pregame breakdown of this one. Didn't have much on it anyway. But Aranda with a single drives in Mesa Jr. And just like that, Rays up 1-0 with a runner on first and no outs there. Cubs, 3-1 is the score against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Shota Imanaga calming down after giving up the leadoff homer to Shohei Ohtani. 3 innings so far, 5 hits and 4 strikeouts. The lone blemish being that homer to Ohtani. Dansby Swanson continuing to do some work, did some yesterday, drives in Horner. And then Pete Crow Armstrong continuing his big day, had a solo shot earlier in the first inning, adds to it with an RBI double driving in Swanson. So all that damage being done for the Cubs in the second inning. Again, they're up 3-1. In-game numbers for you, for those who are tracking some betting opportunities. If you think that this Chicago Cubs team can blow this 3-1 lead early on, you're getting plus 285 on the Dodgers coming back. Totals 10.5 shaded to the over, minus 134. Astros are a minus 2,200 favorite over at DraftKings, up 3-0 over the Blue Jays. And the Rays, a minus 303 favorite here with a 1-0 lead against the Rockies. Coming up next, 3:35 p.m. Pacific time. That'll be Angels and Orioles. And then Nationals and Phillies. We'll get to those breakdowns coming up in about 15 minutes. But our training camp tour continues. We hop on the bus and we head up to Beantown.
Join Stormy and JBT as they go on the Money Moves NFL training camp tour.
The New England Patriots are our team today as we are heading out to Boston. We'll make the trek out to Buffalo tomorrow, but their division rival is what is our focus. I wrote the AFC East, so this has been a fun stretch, right? They're all together. We've been talking a lot about these AFC East teams over the last couple of days. Patriots, one of those teams that do have a lot of regression signs, potentially, as you look from last year to this year. But let's go over some of the basics that we know about the New England Patriots. 14-3 a season ago. Win total for for this year at 10.5, plus 115 to the over, minus 140 to the under for this group. Division wins set to 4.5. Most wins in the National Football League, you're getting about 16, 15 to 1. Fewest wins, 150 to 1, minus 225 favorite to make the postseason, plus 125 to win the AFC East behind the Buffalo Bills, plus 760 to win the AFC and repeat as AFC champions, 16 to 1 to win the Super Bowl. Drake May comes very close to winning MVP, cannot get there, 10 to 1, and Mike Vrabel at 100 to 1 is your coach of the year, one of the longer odds out there. Generally hard for these guys to repeat in terms of coach of the year. Also, do we make the obvious joke? Maybe the voting pool has been cut down by one, you know, one that might vote for Mike Vrabel. Either way, it's hard for him to come back and win this award considering the things that he achieved this last year with the New England Patriots. So where do we start with New England? I think there's the obvious place, which is just the regression and what we expect from one Drake May now that he is taking on a schedule that does have a few more bumps in the road. And I think that that's really going to be what we're monitoring here, right? May last year was incredible. Led the league in completion percentage at 72%, yards per attempt at 8.9, adjusted yards per attempt at 9.5, passer rating 113.5, QBR 77.1, and total expected points added. Some would say all of those statistics add up to the most valuable player in the National Football League. Despite that, though, and finishing second in the MVP, we have our questions about May because of the level of competition that they're facing this year. He deserves credit for handling the schedule that was handed to him and handling it with relative ease for the most part. The Patriots didn't really slip up in any way, shape, or form against one of the easier schedules in NFL history. However, the Patriots finished just two teams, which finished better than 14th in opponent and expected points added per play in the regular season. And then in their postseason run, and this is what kind of sticks in your craw a little bit, the four opponents that the Patriots finished or faced all finished 7th or higher in EPA per play on defense. As a result, Drake May, who led the league in all of those statistical categories that we just brought up, ended up completing just 58.3% of his passes, threw 6 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and the Patriots averaged just 14.3 points per game. So you went from one of the most efficient offenses we had seen to an absolute dreadful offense, largely in part because of an offensive line, which wasn't great. Will Campbell's tiny arms got made fun of a lot, but it's not all of his fault. And Drake May regressed to an extent, and they faced really good defensive opponents on the way to the Super Bowl, and then, of course, leading to the loss to the Seattle Seahawks. May's going to face now 5 teams that finished 10th or higher in opponent EPA per play last season. 3 more finished in the top half of the league. So the question becomes, with Drake May, with this offense, was that run just a flash in the pan against a really easy schedule, or are they legitimately this good? And the flash in the pan was actually the performance against the defenses that they faced in the postseason. And there's an argument to be made that we're somewhere in the middle, obviously, but they did, and I mentioned this when we started the show, I think I'm going to potentially be wrong on New England only because we could talk about regression statistics and whether it looks like they're going to come back down to earth and all those sort of things. They made improvements in the offseason, and they deserve credit for addressing the issues that potentially plagued them last year. Despite all of these great statistics, they're a relatively weak group in terms of their skill positions. Well, they go out and they add to this. Wide receiver Romeo Dubs, 4 years, $68 million. They get A.J. Brown. Brown's presence as a top receiver is an upgrade. They lost Stephon Diggs. Diggs, of course, led them in targets, catches, and receiving yards in 2025. But I think Brown is a really good fit for what the New England Patriots want to do, specifically for May. Remember, May was second in passing completions of 20-plus yards. He had 41. He was third in PFF pass grading on such throws of 20 or more yards downfield at 97.4. Brown himself was tied for 9th among receivers in deep targets last season. He got 4 touchdowns on passes of 20 or more yards, 6th most in the NFL, had a PFF receiving grade on throws 20 or more yards downfield of 95.6. So that's a match made in heaven. Dubs is a really good receiver as well. I trust McDaniels as an offensive coordinator. May has at least proven that he's going to be an upper echelon quarterback. So all of these things kind of put together, the schedule might be tougher, but I think I'm going to be wrong in the sense of this offense is improved enough, and I just trust that May is a generally good quarterback, that they'll be able to at least find a baseline of production that has them closer to 10th and 15th in offensive efficiency this year. I think that's relatively fair. The defense is going to be a question, because that's the other part about this. Is the defense going to regress facing a much tougher schedule of opponents? Because the same criticism of this team's offense is generally what's followed this team around as a whole. Patriots finished the 2025 season 11th in opponent EPA per play and opponent EPA per pass. They also faced just one single foe, Buffalo, that finished higher than 13th in defense last year. One. So, and technically they did it twice, right? Because Buffalo, of course, is a division foe. But this season, they're going to have six games against teams which finished 10th or better in expected points added per play. Again, remember the fact that you took on a very, very poor schedule. So what is this going to look like for this defense now facing some of the better offenses in the National Football League? And if you stretch out just a little bit in terms of your rankings, you're also facing the 11th and 12th best offenses in the NFL from last season, Kansas City and Jacksonville. And Jacksonville, my co-host, Stormy Bonatoni, expects them to be very, very good. So there is going to be something to be said of this defense. And I think of the two units, if there was a group that was going to, we'll call it, greatly regress and be exposed by the level of schedule and opponent that they faced last year, I would say the favorite is the defense as opposed to the offense. I trust what you saw in May. You trust in Josh McDaniels as an offensive coordinator, but I think there's something to be said of, and by the way, and the additions, but the defense might take a little bit of a step back here. So let's talk about this big picture. New England, if you look at it from a strength of schedule standpoint, still one of the easier ones in the NFL, not as easy as it was a season ago, but the 10th easiest schedule in the NFL by opponent strength of schedule. A relatively difficult start to the season. And so you do wonder how this gets off in terms of the start, the record, and where you want to go in terms of investing them at the time of year, potentially. You start with that thing against the Seattle Seahawks to open the season, a Super Bowl rematch. Some would say a losable game against the Steelers. I don't believe that to be the case. But consecutive road games against the Jags and Bills, and with three of these four starting the way that they are, it's not out of the realm of possibility, because three of those teams are potential, at least we'll call them conference contenders, and Super Bowl contenders at the very least. They're going to be losable games. There is a chance that you're 1-3 heading into a home game against the Las Vegas Raiders coming up in week 5 this year. And is that the time that you sit back and wait? How much does the market realistically adjust? Because that schedule really does lighten up after that. Consecutive games against expected cellar dwellers against the Raiders and the Jets. You do have to face the Bears on Thursday night before you come back to take on the Dolphins on the road. Those are all games in which you can snap back to 500 pretty quickly if you get off to that pretty rough start that maybe looks like you could on paper. And then the back half of the schedule, we'll see how you manage it. But this is a more difficult schedule than I think a lot of people realize, if, of course, the upside hits with some of these teams too. Like, what if I'm right about the Jets? I think ultimately I get to the point where under 9.5 seems to be a fair ask of New England. 9 wins is still a pretty strong year, but if the Jets are better, the Bills are exactly what the Bills are, and some of these teams with the opponents that you have on this schedule, the Packers, the Lions, others, Vikings, even if they hit and they're as good as many people think they are, there is a reality that this is actually a 9-win team as opposed to a team that's going to, again, push for those double-digit wins, and 9, again, is technically pushing for those. Hey, guys, I think it's Wednesday, right? You know what that means. Circa, Survivor, documentary. Out. Tonight's episode, the turning point in week 5. For the first time in Circus Survivor history, the number one pick of the week goes down on a Thursday night. Chaos that follows unlike anything the contest has ever seen. And by the time week 6 through 9 play out, contenders separate from the pretenders and the pressure gets very, very real. $18.7 million is on the line. Watch it tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern on VSiN. If you need to catch up, episodes 1 and 2 are on YouTube right now. All you got to do is search VSiN Live. We'll come back, get to the baseball schedule and a little bit more here on Money Moves.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
A few score updates for you. Rays tack on one more, so they're up 2-0. Bottom of the first inning, though, so the Colorado Rockies trying to get back into this thing. We'll keep you abreast of all these scores as we go on. We've got 30 more minutes left. Mitch and Paul will take you the rest of the way. But right now, Rays, $3 favorite over at DraftKings with that 2-0 lead in the bottom of the first inning. Total 11.5 shaded to the over there at minus 131. Rangers now finally pouring it on a bit here. This was going to be the question. We had talked about this start for the San Francisco Giants and the sense of a couple of things, but Wisenhunt and his issues had been a largely command, and what was that going to look like as it continued to be a problem? Well, he's got 2 walks already through 2 2/3, has now given up 3 earned runs, struck out 4, but Rangers are starting to do some damage. Now all eyes will be on Bradford. First start back, at least in the major league level, for Bradford after the Tommy John. Going pretty well against the Giants. 3 innings, 2 hits, 5 strikeouts to 1 walk. So if Bradford, I mean, obviously if it can be that, striking out guys at that rate with no earned runs, it would be fantastic. but hoping the Rangers maybe get a little bit more of an arm to add to this team. They have been flailing, to say the least, and we would like them to win that division, but it looks like the Houston Astros, who have chased Jameson Taillon already, they are up in that game 3-0 as well. We are in the bottom of the fifth inning. Altuve up to bat, 2-for-2 for the day, including a solo shot that got the scoring started there. In-game numbers for you when it comes to the Houston Astros. They are a minus 2,700 favorite. So just lay $2,700 to win 100. That's all you need. And arguably, where all eyes will be as well, is the game of the day. I say that with some question. Chicago Cubs taking on the Los Angeles Dodgers. Last night's game was absolutely fantastic. Everything you wanted out at Wrigley at night. Well, middle of the fourth inning, Cubs holding on to their 3-1 lead over the Los Angeles Dodgers. Ian Happ due up here for the Cubs. Right after him, Swanson, and then Taylor. Swanson with a little bit of damage today as well. Drove in one, scored himself two, 3-1, and Imanaga having a pretty good day so far. Outside of the solo shot he gave up to Ohtani, 6 hits and 6 strikeouts to his name so far for Shota Imanaga in the bottom of the fourth inning. So let's hit a couple of baseball games. We'll hit on some of the big ones, too. We have some pretty hefty favorites out there. The Phillies, for example. Let's start here because the Nationals, I think, we talk so much about these teams post-trade deadline because we're infatuated, and rightfully so, with success and contenders, that we don't really talk a ton about what the teams that shipped off all the pieces potentially look like. The Nationals, of course, are one of those teams that are a little different now. Now, we still have a couple of pieces there, but the problem is James Wood injured, and then, of course, you ship off one of your big pieces in Garcia, so now it's a lineup that is dinged up and shorter because of the trade deadline, and now you question what's going to this offense is going to look like, and now the Nationals, who are absolutely sliding, have lost 7 straight, and then yesterday, that's why we bring this up, got blanked 5-0 by the Phils in that loss in Philadelphia. One of the things that we had brought up potentially was C.J. Abrams and the ability to maybe walk in a game like this, pitch around him. You're not really too worried about other pieces. That did not come to fruition. He did strike out twice, went 2-for-4. But you got to wonder where this Nationals offense is going to come from, as they are somewhat shorthanded here with both the trades and the injuries. On the other side, Painter's going to get the start. He's going to oppose Jake Irvin. Not the sexiest of pitching matchups here, but still, even with Painter's struggles on the season, you're laying $190. We're the Philadelphia Phillies here. 6.72 ERA for Painter on the season. 5.23 expected ERA. Last start was good. He was on the road against Baltimore. Pitched 6 innings. Gave up 2 earned runs. 6 strikeouts, 3 walks. It was the first time we had seen him since the middle of June. So maybe fixing some things here. But either way, it's interesting to see the season-long numbers for Painter and that massive price. The power rating for Washington, abysmal at this point right now, considering the injuries and the trades. But let's go to the American League. Can't get enough of them, man. They continue to dominate. Yesterday was surprising. I don't know about you guys, but there's times where I'm sitting down, I'm like, all right, ready to watch some baseball. This is going to be absolutely fantastic. And then a blowout immediately starts, and you're like, well, I was looking forward to that one. That was a Red Sox yesterday. I was looking forward to seeing what Boston had in store for the White Sox, and they had an absolute beatdown in favor of the Red Sox, ready for the White Sox. So now we get another matchup here. But Boston, a 14-2 win last night, now gets to send out Sonny Gray to oppose Sean Burke. Gray has been tremendous, and this does seem to be one of those, hey, what are you missing type deals, because initially for the Red Sox, with the way that they have been playing and the way that Sonny Gray has been pitching and the fact that they have the best bullpen in Major League Baseball, $1.28 with the way the offense has been working over the last couple of weeks, looked really strong in the series against the Dodgers, again, looked strong last night, seems like we're missing something, but 2.93 ERA for Sonny Gray. There are some indicators of some regression, but nothing crazy, right? A 3.61 fielding independent, a 3.84 on the expected ERA, some contact numbers that maybe you would like to see improve here for Gray. And his last 2 starts really haven't been that great. We've seen his ERA get driven up because of his last 12 innings and 2 appearances. 17 total hits over the last 2 starts for Sonny Gray. 9 earned runs, got taken deep once, 8 strikeouts to 2 walks. Not in the form that you would expect. And one of the things that has stuck out just a little bit for Sonny Gray in recent form, which is maybe why you see this cheap price here, is the command. The 2 walks in the previous start, the 4 walks that he had a couple of starts ago at home against the Tampa Bay Rays. So that's something to monitor for Gray if the command is going to start to wane just a little bit here, because he has been one of the big reasons why the Red Sox, outside of the bullpen, have been operating the way that they have. He's also pitched relatively well at home. And in fact, you can make the argument for Gray that there's some better things to come if you look at it. But 2.72 ERA in Boston so far this year, 3.34 fielding independent. He's been really, really good. So seems like it's too tempting to go in in on the other side and say, yeah, why not back Gray and the Red Sox, considering the way that they have been playing? He has been pitching, especially in Boston. Sean Burke would be a pretty good deterrent, though. 3.04 ERA, 3.29 fielding independent on the season over the course of 22 appearances and 18 starts. He has been pretty steady for the White Sox. You look at his recent stretch here, he has not given up more than two earned runs in an appearance since June 13th. He's been absolutely unreal, and over that stretch, nearly untouchable. So if you go recent stretch, you can understand this, but the Red Sox, you see some of the power rating adjustments on some of these teams, the way that they're playing. This one does not seem to be there, so almost too easy to look at this at minus 128 and think, you know what? That's too expensive. I'm going to go the other direction. Also note, too, and this was pointed out by our own Steve Mackinnon, but some of the splits today, pretty tight numbers if you like those here, right? Minus 128 and plus 120 coming back on Sean Burke and the Chicago White Sox if you wanted to play them. Let's go to Will Warren and the New York Yankees. Cardinals will send out Andre Pallante today as well. This has been a fun series so far. Will Warren out there with a 4.14 ERA, 3.96 fielding independent, and a 4.45 expected ERA. So you could argue there is some better things coming for him. You could also argue there's worse things coming for him. Remember, expected ERA really tied into some of the contact numbers you have. Fielding independent tied in a little bit more into the home run numbers, home run to fly ball ratio, things of that nature. But Warren, the last time we saw him, six shutout innings, struck out seven on the road against the Chicago Cubs. 6 2/3 will be specific for Warren the last time we saw him. But it rounded out, or bounced back from, we'll say, a pretty good start, or a pretty bad start against the Philadelphia Phillies. Three innings, six earned runs, got taken deep in that contest as well. Warren, like many pitchers, prone to some blowups, but he's had a couple in recent stretches here against the Rays a couple of weeks ago, probably about a month ago now at this point, had given up six earned runs. So we know that Warren can, at least at times, put forth some pretty poor efforts against the St. Louis Cardinals. Maybe he's going to have a little bit of a better fate here. At home so far this year, it has gone pretty well for him. 3.75 ERA. If you look at the advanced numbers too, a 3.45 fielding independent. Xips at 2.78 in the Bronx for Warren. So he has handled himself pretty well here. Yankees are a $1.53 favorite against the Cardinals. I'm not the biggest Pallante guy, but he has proven to be a really solid starter for the Cardinals. So trying to reach out and catch a falling knife has failed, and his numbers have really evened out. Really, what you see, what you get. 3.72 ERA, 3.73 expected, and 3.75 FIP. Pretty much everything across the board, rock solid. Has not given up more than three earned runs in his last three starts, and stretched it out a little bit more, four out of his last five. Has had a couple of blow-ups here and there, but Pallante's been really steady, and I've been somewhat surprised by that as somebody hit the early portion of the season, thought there were some signs that maybe you could really play against him, and he's been even better on the road, so this is going to be pretty interesting. He does have a big discrepancy in his numbers away from home, but a 2.66 ERA and 44 innings pitched for Pallante so far this year might be worth looking at and playing on potentially. And then let's go to the pathetic sad bowl, only because I am pretty fascinated situationally about this. We have Reed Detmers getting the start for the Angels today. He opposes Trevor Rogers. I mean, do you make the narrative emotional case of Reed Detmers being viewed as a potentially untouchable piece, and thus this Angels squad really believes in him, and he's going to go out there and give his best stuff? Or is he upset because he is stuck rotting away with the Anaheim Angels and now on the road against an even sadder Baltimore Orioles team that seems to have given up on the season? Either way, Detmers has been absolutely tremendous. His last three starts, he has pitched at least five innings in all three. In totality, 16 and a third innings of work. He's given up a grand total of three earned runs over that stretch, and has struck out 22. Detmers has been every bit of the pristine candidate you expect him to be. And I think if you're accounting for recent form, I think Detmers is definitely a guy potentially worth playing on. Even if you want to lurk on an earned runs under for Detmers, I think that might be worth looking at here. And on the other side, you do get Rogers. Pretty interesting pitching matchup overall between these two. But I will say, for Trevor Rogers, coming into this year, thought really strong things. Probably a little unlucky, but for the most part, nothing really worth grabbing onto. 4.27 ERA, 3.56 fielding independent. I think Detmers is the guy that you want to back here, and you wonder if Rogers is just going to bounce back after a pretty average outing. Went on the road last time out against the Detroit Tigers, gave up four earned runs over the course of six innings. Snapped a stretch, though, where he looked like last year's Trevor Rogers, which he had allowed two earned runs or fewer in about seven consecutive outings. So we'll keep an eye on those ones, but we'll also update what's going on here. But baseball does seem to be pretty strong at this point. Football season's here, though, right? Like, we're distracted. We want football. That's all we want. And make sure that when football season is here, you use the Sharp Plays. Go to sharpplays.com. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. Sharp Plays gets their record audited daily, even by the haters. So check it out. Follow the Sharp Money at sharpplays.com. We'll wrap it up. Take a look back at week zero and a little bit more into breaking news in the National Football League, the world of sports, before we head out of here.
13 Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, we might be cooked here, folks. 3-3 tie. Hunter Brown has decided to give up three runs to allow the Blue Jays to tie the game in the top of the sixth inning. Dead to me forever. I may or may not have used a keeper selection in our draft this year in our fantasy baseball league. I say our, like any of you know what I'm talking about. But either way, Hunter Brown's somewhat disappointing today. And for the season as well, one would argue. I have a lot of debates to be made about whether or not I will keep him for a second consecutive year. I probably will. My team is awful. So I'm not right about everything. But I'm right about some things. And if you got our college football betting guide, which you should, by the way, go to VSiN.com/subscribe. We have lots of different ways that you can get stuff. You can check out the introductory offer for $9.99 because the college football betting guide is part of a VSiN Pro subscription. So you should check it out. Check out what we do. I always like to say it involves that subscription, everything we do. So if you stick around for a couple of months, guess what? You get the start of football season, but you also get the start of basketball season, both college or pro. You get the start of hockey. You get bowl season, everything in between. Just check it out. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. But I invoke our college football betting guide because I wrote two conferences, the SEC and the Mountain West. And one thing that I don't think I've been shouting it from the rooftops, but I have been consistent and somewhat loud, and I am a consistent and loud individual in general in life, is that I'm not really buying what's going on with New Mexico. Now, New Mexico is a team that is favored in some spots or tied for the odds or in terms of odds to be the favorite to win the Mountain West. Some spots are kind of evening out. They're the second choice behind UNLV. But one of the things that I have pointed out both in the Mountain West preview and to the people who will listen to me, and I was on with Tim Murray earlier today and brought this up again, it was the first burning question I had for the Lobos. Is the quarterback position actually settled? Jack Lane back after leading the Lobos to 9 wins in a bowl berth. But for those who don't remember, he missed spring recovering from surgery on a torn flexor tendon in his throwing elbow. Why in the world am I bringing this up right now, the New Mexico Lobos plus 265 to win the Mountain West? Well, from Sean Ryder, a report out of New Mexico, Jason Eck on the mic about Jack Lane's elbow today at practice. Quote, it's bothering him a little bit. He is out, quote, for the near future, and they are getting a second opinion. This is exactly what we talked about in the guide. It's kind of information you get, so go to VSiN.com/subscribe. It's also why I think New Mexico is a little bit more frail in the Mountain West as a whole, and why even as we look at the conference, Hawaii, they have a significant injury at wide receiver. Air Force, I think, is also very much worth playing, but this conference as a whole, I think, if you're watching to VSiN.com, any of those five teams in that left column, I would not put them in that order. I would have North Dakota State behind Hawaii and Air Force. But the whole point still stands that if any one of those five teams wins this freaking conference, I would not be stunned at all. Now, New Mexico, I would have some questions given the Lane injury. They do have this kid that transferred in from Oregon. I don't know where he's at in the pecking order at this point. Luke Moga, who apparently was a very, very good participant in spring, this last spring, dazzled, I think was the word that was used by reporters out there in Albuquerque. But really big news here. Jack Lane, potential starting quarterback for New Mexico, the returning starter quarterback for New Mexico, and the co-favorite to win the Mountain West, out for the near future for the Lobos. And this is going to be a problem, potentially, for New Mexico. And to build on that, too, really quickly, New Mexico wasn't perfect. They're actually a pretty poor defensive team last year. And again, they were 3-3 straight up, 1-5 against the spread as a favorite last year. They didn't even handle the role of favorite very well. So this is pretty big news for the Lobos. We'll see what ultimately comes of it. But starting quarterback for New Mexico, Jack Lane, out in the foreseeable future, dealing with an elbow issue that ties back to an injury that he suffered right before their bowl game last year. All right. Couple of other notes here. We were going to hit some college football, but we'll hit on some scores very quickly and update you on what's going on, and then we'll get back to it. I mentioned the 3-3 tie for the Astros. Let's go to Chicago, where it seems like the bad vibes are continuing for the Los Angeles Dodgers. They are cooked. Thank God. How about that? After days of people bitching, wrongfully so, about the Dodgers ruining baseball, it's the other owners who don't want to pay any money. Now, all of a sudden, the Dodgers are getting their rear ends kicked up and down the field every single time out. 6-1, Cubs up on top, bottom of the fourth inning. They extend their lead out here. Lauer got the start for the Dodgers. We talked about the general consistency that Lauer had given the Los Angeles Dodgers. But today, getting knocked around, 11 hits with a strikeout, 3 2/3. Cubs are doing a ton of damage at this point right now. And when it comes to the MVP race, worth pointing out in this head-to-head matchup that Pete Crow Armstrong having himself a day. 3 for 3, has scored twice, driven in 4, and has gone deep twice as well. Really showing out against Otani. Otani's only little bit of news right now is the fact that he did have that solo shot to lead things off. But Pete Crow Armstrong having himself quite the day at the plate and has had a pretty good series so far against the Los Angeles Dodgers. This has been a big topic of conversation, obviously, the National League. And how about that? As we speak, you'll never guess. Pete Crow Armstrong is now your odds-on favorite to win the National League MVP at minus 130. We brought this up with Mike Palm the other day when he was with us on Friday, and we'll talk about this again on Friday. I think it was Mitch. We'll have to ask Mitch when he walks in here right now. Or Luke, maybe you can confirm if you can text me if you're back there. I think Mitch added Otani to win MVP within the last week or so. And my thing was, I don't think it's dumb to add Otani. What did we tell Mike? I said, you should probably just wait because at some point, given the way these odds work, PCA is going to be the odds on favorite at some point. Well, we have reached that day. So PCA is now a minus 130 favorite over at FanDuel. Otani plus 105. Schwarber's 125-1. Abrams 125-1. Mizorowski's 125-1. So we're at a two-horse race, but not surprised to see Pete Crow Armstrong get to this buck 30 favorite. The question now becomes, how much of a favorite will he become over the next couple of weeks? The market likes to freak out, especially when it comes to head-to-head performances. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to assume that 3 games of 162 in which the two players are competing against one another directly is not going to impact how this award is being handed out by the time the year's end comes around. But that's just me. I could be a crazy man for thinking that that's not that big of a deal. But big news is Pete Crow Armstrong now a $1.30 favorite as the Dodgers continue to flounder and potentially on their way to a 6th consecutive loss. Other games that are underway, Texas up 4-0, bottom of the 4th inning, runners on 1st and 2nd against the San Francisco Giants, and Tampa Bay holding on to their 2-0 lead, end of the 2nd inning against the Colorado Rockies. Tomorrow, here on Money Move, Stormy's going to be back. We'll get her thoughts on what she learned at Allure College, her little college football conference. Shouldn't call it little. It's like ESPN, and it's a big deal. So it sounds pretty insulting, but I don't mean it to be like that. So we'll find out what her cute little college football conference gave her in terms of information, because I do think that there's probably some things we can glean from that. I think one of the things she hit on was some of the rule changes and emphasis and rules. Maybe we can get something from her that's going to be beneficial from a betting standpoint. But we were talking week zero earlier today and some of the line moves that we saw in these week zero matchups, because week zero is around the corner, man. Like, we are very close to this thing getting started. Mentioned the ramifications of the UNLV and Memphis matchup, the fact that the Rebels are getting bet in that week zero game, pretty big deal there. I cannot let go of the concept of UNLV potentially being one of the more overrated teams heading into this season. But now all of a sudden, maybe your schedule gets a little bit easier considering what's going on at quarterback for the New Mexico Lobos. The other things that are going on, of course, the Dublin game, TCU, the Horned Frogs open up a 6.5-point favorite, total of 49. But let's get to a couple of these. First off, let's talk about Hawaii on the road against Stanford. I talked about this with Tim momentarily on the College Football Betting Podcast. Obviously, I'm very high on this Hawaii team. The loss of Pofele Ashlock at wide receiver is a pretty big deal, but I am extremely tempted to look at Hawaii catching 4 on the road against Stanford. But I will say this, and this is where I think that I am at my weakest when it comes to college football. And, you know, Tim actually kind of brought this up without knowing he brought it up during the podcast today, which is I brought up a letdown spot. I can't remember who it was for, but there was like a situational scheduling spot that I had brought up. And Tim's really big, really good on scheduling spots, right? The letdowns, the look-aheads, all those sort of things. And Hawaii is in a big revenge spot, or a negative one, against Stanford. Stanford, of course, goes out to the island last year. It's the game in which Mike Alejado gets hurt, but they end up winning the game, Hawaii does. And so now you're on the road catching 4. I think that there's not much of a difference between these two, but Tim brought up a really great point. Lines of scrimmage, when you get these differences in the conferences, that makes a pretty big difference, and Stanford's going to be a lot bigger, stronger, potentially, along the lines of scrimmage. Your first game that you're playing here without Ashlock, I'm going to be really curious to see where the market moves on this. 4 is the predominant number, total of 50.5. If you give me like 4.5, I feel like I'm in. I like this Hawaii team a lot, but I might have to stick to my guns and just hold out and wait for conference play to start playing a little bit more on this Hawaii group and think that maybe with the loss at wide receiver that you get off to a little bit of a rougher start. But Stanford holding strong as a 4-point favorite for that week zero matchup against Hawaii. Florida State, a 31-point favorite with a total of 52.5 against New Mexico State. Not many wins potentially on the docket for Florida State, so maybe a bloodletting of sorts for a Seminoles group that's not going to find that many. New Mexico State, I got to tell you, Former UNLV coach, by the way, Tony Sanchez out there, looks like an absolute nightmare. Coaching staff changes late into the offseason, just recently as well along the staff. Seems like it's kind of a absolute clown show out there in terms of the way that it's being run. Not a massive surprise from what you know. But either way, it doesn't seem like that is – there's a lot of tumult, we'll say, for the Aggies coaching staff at this point right now and some other parts of the program. Maybe not the best. Already up against it from a talent standpoint. But catching 31.5, I think it'll be Florida State or nothing in that one. And then, of course, North Dakota State, the Bison, a 7.5-point favorite at the open, total of 48.5 against Jacksonville State. We'll get to more of these week zero matchups as we continue, but wanted to take our first look there. All right, with that, we are all done. Coming up next, it is a Follow the Money. I'm sure they'll react to the news that Shohei Ohtani is now a +105 dog in the race for National League MVP. Keep you updated on all the games going on during the show as well. Stormy will be back tomorrow. Until then, read the College Football Betting Guide. It's up at VSiN.com/subscribe. Well worth the price. Go check it out now, VSiN.com, and we'll see you tomorrow here on Money Moves.